Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, otherwise known as the Aruch HaShulchan. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein was the rabbi, the community rabbi in the community that hopefully you've heard of at some point, in the Vardik, the home of the Musar movement. Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein was a community rabbi dealing in the late 1800s with Jews who were simply trying to get by. So many of them poverty-stricken, depending on their situations. And so many of them going into the Pesach experience, so many of them going into the holiday of Pesach, the holiday of Chayrus, the holiday of freedom, the holiday of redemption of Yeshua. And so many of them feeling so unredeemed. Many of them whom feel like perhaps this holiday is so difficult for me to enter when we're talking about the salvation that happened 2,000 years ago. But today I don't feel like I have a salvation. I don't feel like I am free, so to speak. And those Jews in the late 1800s living in deep poverty, making Pesach on a yearly basis, were having a very difficult time. And Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, the Aruch HaShulchan, opens up his Haggadah. He opens up his commentary to the Seder experiences. People are walking into the Seder to say, Halach ma'anya di'achala v'asana, come and eat. Come join us for our Seder. Jews who had a hard enough time to make a Seder for themselves were inviting others in. And the Aruch HaShulchan responded and tells us that we have to look back, especially at this time. We must look back to the beginning of our religion. We're thinking we're going back a couple of thousand years to go back to the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Before we go to Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have to go back a bit further. If you go back to our forefathers, specifically to Abraham and Sarah, the beginning duo, the couple that started everything, started a revolution for the world that we have still held on to in 2020 in every single place of the world. And Avram and Sarah were living a lifetime. And so many of them, so many of those years, they felt like they were at a loss. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised each and every one of them, each and every year, you're going to, at some point, I have a promise to you that you will pass this down, you will pass this baton, I will give this land that you just walk to, Lech Lecha Me'artecha, to one of your children, to your later generations. In fact, it's not just to your later generations, but your later generations are going to be like a farah aretz, like the dust of the land, like the stars of the sky. You're going to have a huge family, a nation that is humongous. And every year that Avram and Sarah could not conceive a child, in their own moments of real difficulty, in their lack of redemption, they called out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, they called out to God, and year after year, it was getting more and more impossible. In fact, by the time they heard that they were going to have a child, Sarah Imenu laughed. She didn't laugh to scoff at anything. She laughed because how possible was this right now? In the late 90s, 100s, how am I going to possibly have a child right now? It is impossible, mipiateva, on a natural order, it is not possible to conceive. We had all these years that we tried to conceive, to have the child, not only to fulfill their maternal and paternal instinct to have a child to care for, but more on a meta level, for them to be able to pass the baton to the next generation to carry on their mission, their story, their visions. When they find out about it, Sarah Imenu laughs. And a year later, by Pesach time specifically, they have a child, Yitzchak, who becomes the next step in the long journey that the Jewish people have taken ever since. It says the Aruch HaShulchan, if you look to that moment, we learn something very important about the idea of Yeshua, of redemption in general. How does redemption enter into this world? How do we have redemption in this world? Redemption comes, says the Aruch HaShulchan, Limala min hateva, above nature, outside of the natural order. Avram and Sarah looked for their own personal redemption to have a child that they could pass this baton on to, and it was definitely unnatural that they have that child. It was outside of the natural order that they were able to have their moment of redemption. But it doesn't stop at Avram and Sarah. Look to Yetzias Mitzrayim itself. Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were a slave and enslaved people for 210 years. That means when children woke up after 210 years, there were children who were born and died in slavery entirely. They didn't know what life was like outside of slavery. They just thought it was normal to wake up in the morning, be a slave, and to go to sleep as a slave. They didn't have a vision. They didn't read in the newspapers what it was like to be free. They had no concept of what freedom was. And they were going up against the greatest world power of the time. Egypt, the Mitzrim, was the greatest world power of the time. For them to be able to be saved, to be free, and for 210 years to go up against this major army, a major civilization, impossible. Unheard of. The same experience that Avram and Sarah must have had generations earlier when they thought it was impossible to have Yitzchak. Now when we look at Yetzias Mitzrayim, when we look at the story of Mitzrayim, when we look at the Seder experience and hopefully Pesach as well, it could give us a little bit of hope. Just like Rabbi Chil Michal Epstein, Aruch HaShulchan, gave hope to his congregants who were dealing with their troubles, with their difficulties, to look back at our moments in history when Yeshua, when salvation came, that did not match reality, that did not match whatever curve, whatever nature may exist, it didn't match that. It was lemala min hateva. It was above nature. That's how salvation has come throughout our ages. You don't have to look too far. You can look just under the last 100 years in our history. You find that it was almost impossible to tell the story the way it happened, starting with Nazi Germany and beginning a whole new storyline, a whole new chapter with Eretz Yisrael, with the land of Israel. If I had to ask each and every one of you how you would split up the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim in 4 points, create a Spark Notes version of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, perhaps it would get someone like me and my attention span a little bit faster. Especially when I was in high school, Spark Notes was king. What if I asked you to come up with a Spark Notes version of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim? I think many of us would answer, well, we went down to Mitzrayim, we became slaves, God took us out in miraculous form. I don't know if I'd be able to get to a fourth that wasn't like tangential to one of these initial three. But if we look at the core part, the core text of our Seder, the core text of our Haggadah, we'll find the secrets that we're missing. In fact, 1/4 of the story is totally missing from my 3 points just now. All of the Maggid section of this Haggadah, all of the Maggid section, starting with Halach Ma'anya, as we started just a few moments ago with Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein commenting to give hope to his congregation at the time when they felt despair. From the Halach Ma'anya all the way until Tzeil Lamad, we are basically doing a Pizuki de Zimra, an introductory format for us to get to the main idea. After all, Tzeil Lamad and the 4 psukim, the 4 verses that we bring from Sefer Devarim, that a person, a farmer, would bring his first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash and declare on those first fruits these 4 psukim, starting with the words Arami Oved Avi. And those 4 psukim basically are the Spark Notes version of our experience of leaving Yetzias Mitzrayim. Well, what are the 4 points? We went down to Mitzrayim, and it wasn't in our will. In fact, Anus al-Pi Adibur means that we were forced to go down. Yaakov Avinu just didn't want to. Abram, who had the child, Abram and Sarah, who had Yitzchak, at that same moment, God promises that in just a couple of generations, your children will be strangers on a land that isn't theirs. This is Anus al pi adibur. Hashem already dictated what was out of our control about a galus, about an exile that would happen. We went down to Mitzrayim and we were in small numbers, 70 people, starting again, all from that one generation of Yitzhak being born through Yitzhak, through Yaakov Avinu, ultimately having 70 children, 70 family members to go down to Mitzrayim. We went down in small numbers and we came out in large. We had many, many, many children in Mitzrayim. We grew in number and population. That's point number one. That's 25% of the story. We haven't even talked about Yitzhak Mitzrayim at all. Number two, because the Mitzrayim were nervous about us growing in number, that's where all the difficulty came along. That's where the slavery came along. That's where the hard work came along. Because the Mitzrayim saw us as a threat, so they tried to attack us. They tried to push us down, and it only made us stronger. And part, and the last part that I was saying before, number three, is God took us out. God took us out with an outstretched arm, with the osos umosim, with the wonders and the miracles. God took us out of Mitzrayim. But there is one verse that I missed, the one quarter, 25% of the story that is totally missing in my Spark Notes version of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. What is that 25%? It's Vanitzakel Hashem Elokei Avos, Seinu Vayishma Hashem Eskaleinu Vayarseinu Vayasamaleinu. You know what happened in between point two and point four? What happened in between the Egyptians being evil to us and us being taken out? We called out to God. We screamed out to God and God heard our call. Because when we are in the most depths of difficulty, in fact, Rav Soloveitchik points this out, that there was no such thing as tefillah at that point. The Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim had no idea what tefillah was. They had no prayers. They were on the 49th level of Tumah, after all. They're on the 49th level, not doing too well on a spiritual realm. But they called out to God and they screamed out to God. And so often, the best tefillah might come in an inaudible form, perhaps a Rosh Hashanah shofar being blown, perhaps not just a shofar being blown, which is no words, but is a guttural reaction, perhaps just a wailing out, a screaming out, enough! Enough is enough. How difficult can today be in 2020? How many Baruch Dayan MSs, how do I have to say? How many people will get sick with this virus? The way that Bnei Yisrael responded to 210 years of slavery, but more so oppression from an enemy state, from Paro and his cronies, was by calling out to God. V'nitzak el Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, v'yishma Hashem Eskaleinu. And God heard our voices and came to save the day. We don't know when God saves the day. In fact, we don't know when Yeshua begins. The people in Mitzrayim had no clue when Moshe was being appointed to come down to Mitzrayim. At that very moment, Bnei Yisrael had no clue that their Yeshua had already begun, that their salvation has already begun. They had no idea about what was happening distantly. They just saw internally how difficult it was. And in fact, it got worse before it got better. When Moshe came down, Paro reacted and said, more bricks. And I'm not giving you the bricks. You're going to make the bricks yourselves. It became much more difficult in a much quicker span of time. And at that moment, Bnei Yisrael didn't believe that the Yeshua was there or on its way. But there's a main difference between the experience of Mitzrayim and what we're going through today. Rav Moshe Tarragon pointed out in a recent post about tefillah that if you look throughout David HaMelech's tefillos, we just davened four of Kapitlei Tehillim that were written by David HaMelech, King David's Tehillim. David HaMelech has two different types of tefillah, two different types of tefillos that he shares. On one hand, David HaMelech shares tefillos that are kineged, that are against our enemies. There is a clear enemy in line, and David HaMelech reaches out to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, I have my own Paro in front of me, I have my own Haman for him who was a Shaul or an Avshal, whoever it was during his lifetime. When we have a clear enemy, B'nai Yisrael know exactly how to respond. We call out to God, we gather together the pictures from the Kosel when things are difficult. It's remarkable seeing Jews of all different stripes coming together to daven together, because we know how to react when there's an enemy in sight. We know how to say, we don't like what they're doing, we want them to be weakened, we want our forces to be strong so we can be safe and secure against this enemy threat. That's one type of tefillah. And that perhaps is an easier form of tefillah, because we know what the common enemy is. But right now what we're dealing with is this second type of tefillah of David HaMelech. Because David HaMelech at times says, Libi bakshu fanai es panecha Hashem avakesh. David HaMelech at times is not dealing with a direct enemy, but is trying to connect to God, and is trying to dream of a reality that is not like it is today. David HaMelech is looking for a personal Yeshua, a personal salvation, a communal salvation, but not from an enemy. But rather, he looks inside and does a real cheshbon hanefesh, a much more difficult experience of looking internally and asking the big questions. Asking the big questions, what is my life all about? What is important in my life? How do I dream about a better life for myself and for Am Yisrael? Sometimes these difficult moments that have no enemy in sight, where we have no idea this virus is not picking and choosing who's coming after. It's an open enemy. It's not an enemy that we could fight against in the same way that we're typically used to in an easier format of davening. We call out to God and we reach out in tefillah and we dream of a different reality than what it is, because Yeshua comes outside of reality, as Rechiel Michal Epstein, the Aruch HaShulchan, points out. Yeshua does not come in the Teva version, does not come in the natural version of order, but rather comes in a version of order that is outside of Teva. And I want to make something very clear. I am not suggesting we don't follow all the scientific and natural order of what it is today. In fact, we are chayiv. We must follow the rules and regulations that not only the doctors have put out, but the rabbanim have put out as well, pointing out that we should be separated regarding our physical locations. Perhaps we come together in these formats, but we have to be very careful about this virus. But we can't get stuck in a curve to know when the end of that curve is going to happen just because it's a mathematical forum. To be able to describe what this virus looks like, we can't get stuck in our minds with the numbers. We can't get stuck in our minds with where that curve ends. We have to believe that there is a possibility through our tefillos to dream big, to look beyond what the teva is, to look beyond being too old to conceive like Abram and Sarah, to look beyond being too frail and too enslaved to go free against the greatest power of the time. We have to believe there is a reality beyond this current reality. We have to believe that there's something bigger inside. I believe that's what Shabbos HaGadol is all about. Shabbos HaGadol was the first moment on the 10th of Nisan where B'nai Yisrael took their Korban Pesach, they took the animal that was worshipped by the Mitzrim that were their slave masters just days earlier, and took them into their homes and announced to the world that we are going to slaughter these animals for our Korban Pesach. And that was the first moment that Yeshua happened above Teva. That salvation happened above nature, because the natural order would have been that these people would have come and attacked the people who were their slaves. That would have been the natural order. On Shabbos HaGadol, this upcoming Shabbos, we have the capacity to dream big. What is our Chalom Gadol? What is our large dream? Because if we're dreaming big, then we'll get a portion of the way or the whole way there. Rabbi Menachem Penner has been screaming in all of his tefillos, in all of his tefillah updates, that instead of us davening for the day-to-day things again and again and again, we need to be thinking about a reality that we don't currently have yet. We need to be davening for the ultimate geulas, where we don't have these difficulties in society anymore. We don't have pandemics like this. We have to daven Mashiach should be able to come, and we have to believe that that's a possibility. Shabbos HaGadol is all about big dreams and big questions for our lives. The opportunity to take a moment of faith where we have no control. Just like this virus, we have no control over this virus. We have control over how we react to the virus. We don't have control over the virus itself. And so many of us would love to have an answer to the question, why? Why is this happening? Why are good people suffering? Rav Soloveitchik has told us many a time that in difficult times, in difficult straits, the more important question for us to be able to react to these difficult times, although the question of why is legitimate, the question of what can I do now? How can I react now? For many of us, it's simply staying indoors and making sure that others don't contract this disease. For many of us, it's to daven above and beyond what we were typically thinking we were going to daven for, and we're going to daven and more. And we're going to have in mind dreams of what reality could look like in a way that it doesn't look today. Because that's where we take the fate experience of leaving Mitzrayim, where we had no control of going down to Mitzrayim, we had no control over leaving Mitzrayim, and turn it into a moment of destiny, where we step up and say, this is how we would like to react to these difficult moments, through our tefillos, through caring for each and every one of us. The amount of chesed that's been going around in the last couple of weeks is nothing short of inspiring. The work of the amazing doctors who are putting their own lives on the line is nothing short of inspiring and heroic. And for us to reach out to them and say, thank you, Avakaras Atov, during this time is so critical. But we have to be able to dream. So often in these difficult times, and when this will end, we get so stuck on the numbers, on the statistics, on the curves that we're trying to lower, and we are. But the problem with curves is that there is an end to the curve that we're thinking in our mind is the only way this ends. We say, you know, we'll sit in our homes and we'll wait till this is all over. But I think throughout Jewish history, Vanitzak el Hashem Elokei Avoseinu, calling out to God, both with Avram and Sarah, and then in the moments of Yetzias Mitzrayim, have always been the response of Jews throughout Jewish history to difficult times. And these tefillos need to be big tefillos. They can't just be, let's conquer this virus alone. They need to be broader and bigger, and to dream bigger on the Shabbos HaGadol. To go above and beyond what reality could have been like, because I promise you there is not one Jew in Mitzrayim when they called out themselves who thought that the salvation was coming. And steps for that salvation were already underway with Moshe being called at that fire where God says, I heard B'nai Yisrael calling out to me. The salvation was already in the process when B'nai Yisrael had no clue it was on its way. We may have no clue about the answer of why. We may have no clue about what the end result of this will all be. And I'm not the type of person that's going to promise that if you daven really well, I know what the answer is going to be. I don't. None of us do. But I do know that tefillos have always been the way Jews have reacted, especially when they felt like they had no control. And we don't. The things we have control about are the things we need to focus on this Pesach. The opportunity to share a Seder, to be able to have a Seder, and to be able to go to Mirtz Hashem next year's Seder, back with all our families and friends, in a way that'll be b'simcha rabba. But let's not just stop there with our tefillos, that it should end there. What about davening that our Pesach, even this year, but definitely for next year, will be l'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habanuya? Why do we have to get so focused only on the limited scope of where we are stuck right now? And the answer is because we're stuck. We only see the walls on each side of us. But the way to be expansive about this experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of this Cheirus time of year, this time of freedom and salvation, is to pull away those walls, to turn the window wipers on, and to be able to go and see further into the distance, further into what reality can be. The dream of a reality that's not the way it is now. I'll end with a quick story. There was one day I was in camp. I was in camp with my little daughter, who is now almost 5 years old. At the time, she was, I think, 2 years old. And over the course of the summer, she had made a lot of new friends. And she woke up in the middle of the night after being in a whole day in the Gan, in the kindergarten type of experience, a summer camp for the little kids. She woke up in the middle of the night and she turned to me. She ran into my bed and she turned to me, my Leota, and she says, "Autobus!" She says, "Autobus." Now, we just spent an entire year in Israel at that point, so it's not so foreign to her to have said it in Hebrew form, "Autobus." But she said it 3 or 4 times, and I was looking like, I was like puzzled. I was like, are you looking for your toy? How long have you been awake for right now that you've been searching for a toy and you haven't found it? And she looks at me like I am from Mars, and she says, "Abba, bus." Like as if I didn't know what the word autobus was. She was screaming uncontrollably, tears coming down her face. "I want my autobus. I want my bus." And I could not understand what she was talking about. We had no toy bus there. We didn't have a toy bus when we were in Israel. We had no toy bus in the Gan. I went to check the next day. There are no toy buses in the entire Gan. What was she possibly talking about? And it occurred to me that she must have had a dream. She must have had a dream that there was an autobus, there was a bus in her dream she was playing with, and she woke up looking for that toy that she really wanted to play with. But she was not willing to allow me to get away with it. She kept screaming with tears in her eyes, "Autobus, Abba! Autobus, bus, bus! I need this bus!" Until I did what I think any normal human being at the time would have done. I picked up my phone. I went onto Amazon. I typed in toy bus, and I showed it to my daughter, and I says, "You like this?" One click, and 3 days later, it was there. This story has taught me the power of tefillah. Because my daughter was not willing to give up. She had a dream of a toy she had never had before. A toy that she was never going to see had she not pushed me hard enough to do what any Abba, what any father, it's Hashem, our Father in heaven, will do the same. To look it up on his phone, to go onto the Amazon up high, and to say, "This is the house you want. This is the Beis HaMikdash you want. This is the Karban Pesach you want. This is the life you want, a life without disease, a life without disaster, a life without terror, a life without enemies. You want a world that looks like that? Well, you have never seen that before. We don't have that in store." And if we keep davening, and we keep screaming like my daughter did, "Autobus, bus, whatever you want me to say, whatever it is, let me make it clear to you, Ribon Shel Olam, we want the Beis HaMikdash, and we want it now. We want Geula, and we want it now. We don't want this Golus anymore. And not one part of this Golus. It's not just coronavirus, not just the Pesach that's about to come. It's everything. We want a new reality. We want a new dream." We beg like my daughter did, causing me to click one click, to have it ordered on its way to come. It took 3 days to get there. But the Yeshua began at that moment for her. She loves the toy. Mirtz Hashem, each and every one of us will go into this Pesach, this Nisan of Geula, this Pesach of Geula, and daven so hard that their Bein Shalom will have no choice, no choice but to press the one click, quick order of the Beis HaMikdash of Geula. And we can say goodbye to not only this coronavirus, but the exile as a whole. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We should all daven well. Have a chakasher, a bari, a sameach, have a healthy, happy, and kosher Pesach, one without stress and without concern. Ritz Hashem, we will all be able to celebrate Lashana Haba, or maybe even, if we daven hard enough, hopefully Lashana Hazos, Yerushalayim, Abenuya.